We're going to go into a time of questions now. We've received some great questions coming through on Slido, and we're also going to have one. If you just want to ask a question old school in the auditorium here, just put up your hand, and one of our team will run around with a microphone and ask you. We've had some great comments too coming through on live stream. Just thank you everyone who's both here in the room doing that and elsewhere. On the topic of when do you most sort of experience Christian community, Brandon Deng said, when we're all watching the live stream together. I thought that was a good comment. But let's start with some questions and with some of the most, the ones that have been liked the most, Chase, because our time is limited.
Yep.
There's a great question here. Do you have any practical suggestions on taking our relationships and conversations deeper? From going from shallow, superficial conversations to more meaningful ones? I've got some thoughts, but do you want to kick off?
Well, I think if we talk about something like, say, confessing of sin, one of the things that Bonhoeffer is clear about is that we don't have to do that necessarily. Let's just stand in the church and kind of bare our soul to everybody. But actually, he says the whole congregation is represented when we do that even to one. And so there is an intimacy that develops that actually allows us a certain kind of vulnerability. Now, we want to see that in all of the community, but we realize that some of us in a room this size, for example, if this was our church, there'd be a pocket of people that we're obviously closer to. I think it's starting small, allowing that kind of regular expectation to be coming out and then being very deliberate in that space. But you've thought a lot more about this than me, so I'd love for your ideas.
Oh, I don't know if that's true. Certainly one thing that, as I've trained and worked with people on this subject, a very simple and obvious thing is just as Bonhoeffer said, listening is kind of like the first step in Christian service. Often the first and best way to get into a better conversation is simply to ask a question. And for it to be a better question than, how was your week? I mean, that's a good question. How was your week? That's not bad. But if you frame that question differently, if you say, what can I pray for you? Just a question as simple as that, it immediately takes the conversation onto a deeper level. It's onto not just what happened this week, oh, I was really busy and this happened, but what's going on in your life that you would like God's help for? And that immediately opens up a different kind of, especially post-church over coffee conversation. If you open with those kind of questions and genuinely listen to what the person is saying and respond to what they're saying and encourage and ask more and actually pray. The other thing, as someone mentioned before, how rich it can be when we talk about the sermon together afterwards in our church communities. The way you open up those conversations obviously can either lead to a dead end or lead to a conversation. So what did you think of the sermon is a bit of a closed question, like, oh, it was all right, that's pretty good. Yeah, it's kind of often leads to not much more. But if you make a comment about something that you yourself found stimulating in the sermon, something that you wanted to share or you're excited about, I really loved about what he said in verse 27. I'd never realized it before. What did you think of that? You open up a conversation rather than just a kind of a perfunctory thing. That, of course, requires you listening to the sermon with that in mind. Listening to the sermon, thinking, how does this word speak to me, but how does this word stand between me and the other people I'm relating to so that I could relate to other people through this word? What is there about this word I'm hearing in our midst that I could share with Chase or share with you as we're speaking? And so that's also a quick idea as to how we could get a little bit further in our conversations.
Very helpful.
Another excellent question here. How do we best love members of our community that don't fit the mold in our community? How do we best love members of our community that don't fit the mold of my church community? That seems to me to be very like your third point, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy to love people that are different than us. So I think that's why we naturally go towards these groups that are a lot like us. But I think the richness is to be found in the difference. So for example, I've been in different kinds of small groups in my church. So one that's all, you know, under 25s or whatever. That was a while ago, obviously. But under 25s, or you have one that's sort of all ages and stages. The last all ages and stages group that I was in was sort of like a family. You know, you get some second or third cousins, and you get, you know, your aunt that you know, talks too loud, and then you get, you know, your other cousin that's really introverted, you have your sister, your brother, and it's kind of this big family party. There's a lot of tension at times, a bit of problems, but a lot of love. And you start to learn to grow together, to serve one another, to care, to give voice to each other, and who can take responsibility in that context. I think that's a great way to do it. And so I think some of these smaller opportunities of allowing people, again, listening is crucial. If we can learn to listen to people that are different than us, we really learn about them and can learn how to serve them.
Great answer. One thing I won't add any more. Let's do one from in the room here. I saw a few hands going up. Is there a hand here? If I can summarize the question, how does the worship of the community and our joy in the worship of the community, ought that or should that or could that be the real hub or the basis of the joy of our Christian community? Have I captured it? Hmm. And Chase is itching to answer.
No. I'm happy for you two as well. I think if you go to somewhere like 1 John, 1 John, you find a lot about the one another's, as you do in John's Gospel. And I think one of the key things that we can see in the New Testament is that the way that we revere God is often expressed in the way that we love each other. So actually our love for God is actually manifested in the way that we love one another. And I actually think in 1 John 4 there's a good case to be made that we encounter God in one another. So that actually the way that I regard you as a brother filled with the Spirit is actually how I'm treating God himself in a sense as I'm caring for you. So there is something crucial about our worship together that way. You might want to add something.
Yeah, I just want to add, let's take a comprehensive view of worship and say both and not either or. So I take your point entirely that the corporate expression of our rejoicing and thanksgiving, our praise, which we naturally think of as singing, but that's certainly part of it, but not everything. It's everything. Mm. It's our whole corporate gathering around the word and our response of gladness and thanksgiving and joy. Joy in singing, joy in speaking with each other, joy in celebrating the great things of the gospel, joy in the Lord's Supper together as we proclaim his death. All the things we do that we do together, they're, I think, a great source of joy and a great way of expressing joy that comes from the salvation that is in Jesus Christ. And I mentioned that only briefly in the in my talk, that certainly in Bonhoeffer's view of community, the one another community that he talked about in terms of those different facets sprang for him out of the fact that we're all together around the word, singing and rejoicing in the word, reading the word, speaking the word with each other, rejoicing as a community around the word. And if you want to put the label of worship on that, that's fine. But that's the reality that does stand at the center of who we are. So yeah, I think that's a helpful comment. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. We'll have one more in the room just down the front here, and then I'll take another one from Slido.
Hi, I just wanted to press a little bit on Chase's point about compatibility rather than community. How do you balance sometimes the necessity of, for example, compatibility through, say, needing a particular ministry at a particular age or life stage, for example, youth and young adults or kids ministry, and sometimes congregations clustering around compatibility by virtue of, say, parents only being able to go to a particular service, with seeking to generate gospel-centered communion?
It's your point, bro. Go for it.
I think the compatibility issue, I want to be careful not to push it too far. So I'm not against kids ministry or even youth ministry for that matter. I think a lot of the ways that we think about compatibility actually come down to convenience rather than necessity. And so, for example, for children's ministry, the way I really justify children's ministry is actually an intelligibility and language barrier. So I actually think a lot of the kinds of things that we do in the main congregation are unintelligible, almost like another language to a lot of children, so that we can actually speak a better language to them that's more appropriate for their understanding and growth. And we have to find other ways to articulate them into the family dynamics of that congregation. But my point is I'm not trying to push it too far in saying that it has to be, you know, kind of just only this way or something like that, but that actually a lot of our issues about compatibility come down to convenience.
I'm going to take a couple more quick questions because our time is nearly up. The top question at present is, should we prioritize building up Christian community over our other relational priorities like our biological families or non-Christian friends? One of the fascinating things, I'll take a first bite of this.
I think you should have it. One
of the really interesting things that Bonhoeffer looked at, interestingly, and which Christians have been struggling with ever since, is what sort of thing is a Christian community? Is it like a family or is it like a society? That is, does it exist for its own purposes and in relation to itself, like a family does? Or is it an organisation with a corporate purpose that's given a task, like a company that gathers together and makes something for profit? And Bonhoeffer pointed out that the church is, he thinks, unique among all sociological types in the world in that it's simultaneously and always both. That it's a community that is its own justification and its own rationale. The end or purpose of the church is to build the church. We're a family who exists for one another and for the growth of one another, and yet we're a family with a business, with a mission to reach the lost and to draw more people into the fellowship of Christ's people. And so in terms of trying to prioritise, I don't like that language, I don't think, in this question. I see what it's getting at, but the point is I don't think there's finally a dichotomy between the two, that the church is a family business, a community business, where we're committed to one another primarily, but we primarily have a purpose to go out and reach the world with that same gospel that binds us together. And so our church communities are always doing both of those things, and we can't let one, I don't think, dominate the other. Do you want to add anything to that? Friends, I think we will pause there. It's just 9 o'clock now, and I have a few more things to say. Thanks. Give Chase a clap.